That majestic piece there. Rick's the only one who's appropriately attired for the day, I think. Did you notice that with his tie? Nice tie. Oh, happy Feast of Trumpets, as we call it. Memorial blowing. I'm going to start in Mark chapter 8 today. Mark chapter 8 and verse 27. Kind of a roundabout way of getting where I'm going, but you'll see what I'm up to. Mark 8:27 says, Jesus went out and his disciples into the towns of Caesarea Philippi, or Caesarea Philippi, if you lived back then. And by the way, he asked his disciples, saying unto them, Who do men say that I am? And he answered, or they answered, said, John the Baptist, and some say Elijah, and some say one of the prophets. And he said to them, But whom do you say that I am? And Peter answered and said to him, You are the Christ, you are the Messiah. And he charged them that they should tell no man of him. So here's this individual that we believe came to be the Messiah, and he's telling people, don't tell anybody. And that seems a little odd in some ways. And usually, at least in public, Jesus was not very open about his messiahship, if you want to coin a term there. In fact, he had to plan his actions to minimize the chances of being killed, being caught and killed before the proper time. And that gets me thinking, and that's not the purpose of the sermon today, but you know, we say he's fully human. And you think, well, he had all this power and he had God behind him, of course. But we could look, in fact, I think I'm going to turn to one here, in John chapter 7, I might turn to a couple. John chapter 7, it says after these things in verse 1, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he couldn't walk in Jewry or down in Judea, because the Jews sought to kill him, and the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. So here comes Feast of Tabernacles time, and you know, they're saying, come on up to the feast, and he says, and I'm going to skip down to verse, you know, his brothers, his family didn't believe. He said, come on up. He said, well, it's not time yet. Verse 6, he said to them, my time is not yet come, but your time is already ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hates, because I testify of it, and so forth. He says, go up to the feast. I'm not going yet, for my time is not yet come, not fully come. And when he had said these words, he stayed in Galilee. But when his brothers had gone up, then he went up later to the feast, not openly, but as it was in secret. So he realized that people were out to get him, and he actually delayed his journey to the feast. He lived up in Galilee, had to go down to Jerusalem. He delayed his trip to the Feast of Tabernacles in part to protect himself. Verse 30, same chapter. They sought to take him. So even when he got there, they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him because his time had not yet come. And you can read that and think, well, it just didn't happen because God ordained it. It didn't happen. Okay, yes, but there's more to it. If we skip down to verse 59. No, I can't skip to verse 59. Where am I now? Sorry. We've got to go to chapter 8 first. Chapter 8, verse 20. These words spoke Jesus in the treasury as he taught in the temple. No man laid hands on him. Okay, now we go to verse 59. And this is where he was talking about Abraham, before Abraham was I am. And in verse 59 he says, and they took up stones to cast at him, but Jesus hid himself. So he had to hide. You know, it does say he was tempted in all ways like we are. One of those ways he was tempted or tested is that he had to run for his life sometimes. You think, well, how can that be? But he was fully human. So it's interesting to think about that. He went and hid, and finally he went out of the temple and went through the midst of them. He was able to lose himself in the crowd. But the point was he had to. In chapter 9, verse 31, no, that's not what I want. Or maybe it is. Let's see. I want to skip down to verse... Well, that's all right. I've made the point there. When we get to John 13 and verse 1, we don't have to turn there. We read that at the Lord's Supper service or Passover, it says that he knew his time had come. The point was, until his time came, he was low-key about being Messiah and actually told people, don't tell them. Don't tell them what you believe. He'd heal people and tell them, don't tell anybody. Other people are going to know anyway. But he's saying, don't make a big deal, because he actually had to think about saving himself in a way. And that's just part of what part of his human experience. So for most of his ministry, Jesus played down the fact that he was the Messiah, and he even had to avoid capture at times. When the time came, it was a different story. Jesus made it obvious. He made it obvious that he was a king. He made it obvious that he was the Messiah, and he paid for it with his life, didn't he? On this day today, on what we call the Feast of Trumpets, we look forward to his return as the King of all kings. And what we're going to do today is take a look at these events at the end of his life, when he made it obvious that he was a king over 2,000 years ago and declared his kingship. And we'll review the gospel accounts, and I don't have now. I got some pictures on my computer. I've got some video. I've got some helicopter footage. I was going to try to make this come alive. So we're going to test my powers of description today as I describe some of the scenery, some of what the area was like where all these things happened. I'll try to make the whole story come alive for you. I'm going to start before the story, though. I want to go in the book of Luke, and I'm going to start in Luke chapter 9. The middle of the book of Luke is interesting, and I'll start in Luke chapter 9, verse 51. It says, it came to pass, when the time was come that he should be received up, Luke 9:51, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. So he's up in the Galilee, and he's ready to go to Jerusalem. Now, this is Passover time. This is in the spring. And he's going to take this journey. Now, Luke, all the way to chapter 19, gives an account of different things that, at least the way Luke puts it together, happened on his way, happened on the journey. I don't believe that Luke was giving a chronological blow-by-blow account. This happened, then he went here, then he went here, and this happened, and this I think he's doing it thematically. He's putting a package of information together, of information that's not from Mark. It's other sources. So I don't think it's chronological. But one of the themes of the parables and the miracles that Luke puts together in the middle of the book of Luke, which is called the travel narrative, one of the themes is that Jesus is king. All right? And he ends that travel narrative in chapter 19, which I've just recently spoke. I've given several sermons in Luke 18 and 19 and so forth. But the travel narrative ends with a parable, and it's the parable of the pounds. And as they heard these different things, it says in chapter 19 and verse 1, and Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. Now, if I had my map here on the screen, I would show you that he's up in Galilee. Galilee's up where the Sea of Galilee is, okay? That makes sense. It's up north, and it's a province. It's a Roman province up Galilee. Jerusalem is down in the south, and Jerusalem is near the Dead Sea. In between, and it's in Judea, a Roman province of Judea. In between Judea and Galilee is a place called Samaria. It's like where the northern 10 tribes were. And Samaria had Samaritans, which the Jews hated. They didn't like. They were wannabe Jews, I guess, or whatever it was. The Jews did not like the Samaritans. And in fact, some pious Jews, when it was time to go from Galilee down to Jerusalem for the feast, they would take a detour. And from your perspective, let's see, they would go to the east into what we call Jordan today, across the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and come down in Gentile territory, and come down to around the Dead Sea, and then go up to Jerusalem. And why does they say up to Jerusalem? Because from Jericho to Jerusalem is uphill. It's about 18 miles, according to Josephus. In those days, the road was about 18 miles, but Jericho is 800 feet below sea level. And Jerusalem is 2,500 feet above sea level. So you had to go over, a half a mile in elevation, besides going 18 miles. So you went up to Jerusalem. In fact, almost everywhere you were, you went up to Jerusalem. But especially from Jericho, you did that. So Jesus is in Jericho, according to Luke here in chapter 19. And you've got the incident with Zacchaeus. And it says in verse 11, where the beginning of the parable of the pounds, it says that when they heard these things in he spoke a parable because they were close to Jerusalem. They'd made it down to Jericho. And because they thought the kingdom of God should immediately appear. And then he does the parable of the pounds, saying, look, you know, like a king went off to receive his kingdom and trusted people with some money while he was gone. And I made the point when I gave the sermon that the point of the sermon is not so much what you did with the money while the king was gone, but the fact that you did something. That the king was going to go. Would you represent? He wasn't king yet, but he was going to go. He's going to come back and be king. So you had to believe that he was going to become king. And the point of the parable of the pounds, which I think the main point of it is, were they and are we willing to put our lives on the line to speak for, to represent this individual who says he's king, but he's going off for a while, and he's going to come back as king? Are we willing to be his men and women while he's gone, knowing, believing that he will come back as king? I think that's the main point of the parable of the pounds. Not so much how much you did, but are you going to do anything at all? That's why in both the parable here and the one in Matthew about the talents, that in the parable it was so upset that the one individual didn't do anything. Not just that he preserved what he had, but he didn't do anything with it. He just hid it. He didn't want to be associated with this individual who was going to become king. But, you know, our faith is in that individual who says he's going to be his king, and he's coming back as king, and that's what we look forward to today. So we want to do something with what he gives us, with the gospel, and that's what he gives us, the gospel. So anyway, this is the last parable before that Luke presents, before Jesus enters into Jerusalem. And the parable is about a king or someone who is going to become king and has to go receive his kingship and come back. So Luke's making the point that Jesus is a king. And Luke does that more than the other evangelists, I believe. On this journey, by the way, I'll just go back to Luke 17. You don't have to turn there. But Luke 17 and verse 11 says, what came to pass as he went to Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. So Jesus went right down. He took a straight path, which took him through Samaria, where a lot of Jews wouldn't, the very pious ones wouldn't do it. But he went right down through Samaria. And he ended up down in Jericho, which is near the Dead Sea. I've gotten ahead of myself, so I've got to catch up. Luke chapter 19, where we are, when we get to verse 28, it says, it came to pass when he came nigh to Bethpage and Bethany, at the mount called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, and we'll get to the rest of that story later. Now is where I'd show you some of the videos. And I'm going to do a little bit of describing, if you'll bear with me. Jericho's way down by the Dead Sea. It's 800 feet below sea level. The Dead Sea is another, 400 feet lower, maybe 1,200 feet below sea level. There was, in ancient times, very ancient times, and Jericho is supposed to be the oldest the oldest inhabited fortress on earth. It's located there because there was, it's kind of a desert area, but there was a very lush spring there. And they've excavated the Jericho from many, many, many years ago. And the town is still there, although the excavation is a very small portion of it. And there was a road that went from Jericho to Jerusalem. Now there's two things I really wanted to show you in these pictures, so I got to try my best to describe. One of them is the area between Jerusalem and Jericho. Has anybody ever been there and traveled it? You have. I could get you to describe it. I've never been there. I've only seen pictures and talked to other people who have been there. But once you go, I'm sorry?
Hot and dry.
Hot and dry. But very what? Wait, how would you describe the terrain?
Desert.
It's desert, but as you go from Jerusalem down, is rugged a good description? Depends on what road you're on, I guess. You're in a bus, isn't it? No. The aerial photography that I have, and I've got it on my computer, I can show you later if you want to see it. It's extremely desolate, desert, but it's also very rugged. There are wadis, there are like canyons that go down. One of them is a continuation of the Brook Kidron. It goes all the way down to Jericho. But it's like a canyon. The road, it was up on the top. The road was up high, overlooking this canyon in particular. And it was a very rough road and a rugged road. And it had lots of caves on the side. When Jesus gave his parable about the Good Samaritan, where did that take place? Anybody remember? Where was that? It's on that road between Jerusalem and Jericho. Why? Because it, and why, you know, the parable talks about somebody who's robbed by a highwayman, right? Was Jesus just picking something out of thin air? No, it was this was a road that was known for highwaymen hiding out in the caves and robbing people when they rode on this, when they would ride or walk on this road. It was a dangerous road, and it was a rugged road, and it was very hilly. And Josephus says that, by the way, that this was the road that the Roman 10th Legion came up to lay siege to Jerusalem in 69 A.D. And what he reports is that in 69 A.D., the Romans, in order to bring their siege instruments up to Jerusalem, fixed the road. So the road that we have described in history is a road that was fixed in 69 A.D. Before that, it was even worse. And it's bad enough, you know, what remains that you can still see. And I say in the pictures I have, you can still see remains of the Roman road. But the road in Jesus' time was a lot more rugged and a lot more dangerous and a lot more, you know, uneven and so forth. But it was a very unusual, a very dangerous and rugged road in a rugged area. What else did I want to say about that road? Oh, it's interestingly enough, in fact, we need to turn back to this, I think, to get the point. I don't know where I have it in my notes, but I'm going to turn back now. 2 Samuel chapter 15. You remember that David had an incident with his son, right, who took over being king. And David had to flee for his life. 2 Samuel chapter 15. So here we have a king who is king, or was king, or whatever you want to say, and he's leaving Jerusalem. And where does he go? Well, we'll start in chapter 15, and look at verse 13 to start with. I'm in 1 Samuel, so that's not going to help. Let's try 2 Samuel. And there came a messenger to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with after Absalom." You know, Absalom's won him over. And David said to his servants and all that were with him in Jerusalem, he said, "Arise, let us flee, for we will not escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword." So they had to flee. Which way did he go? Well, verse 30 says, David went up the ascent of Mount Olive. Mount Olivet, wept as he went up and had his head covered and so forth. So he went up the Mount of Olives. And if we wanted to continue on, chapter 16 and verse 1 says, when David was a little past the top of the Mount of Olives, and I'll describe a little bit, and this will be in the pictures too, describe a little bit about the Mount of Olives. So he went to the top. And then finally, when you get down to chapter 16 and verse 22, it says, I don't want 22, I'm sorry. That's what I wrote. But I've got the whole chapter here. Somewhere along the line, it says that he ended up in Jericho. Somebody finds that, let me know. But he went over the Mount of Olives. And he went down, not this Roman road, because it wasn't a Roman road there then, but he went down the road to Jericho. That's where he hid out for a while. I just wrote the whole chapter, but I don't have time to go through the whole chapter to find that. Oh, okay, 17, verse 22. David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan. So they crossed over Jordan. They went down to Jericho and beyond, and cross over Jordan, excuse me. So what you have here is this long journey, and you have David leaving Jerusalem, going up over the Mount of Olives and down all the way to the Jordan, down to the Dead Sea area. So he's fleeing his kingship, isn't he? And you could also, if you want to write down 2 Kings chapter 25, verses 1 to 5, and you can read that Zedekiah had to do the same thing. Nebuchadnezzar had laid siege to Jerusalem, and Zedekiah tried to escape. He was caught and he tried to escape by going out over the Mount of Olives and down to Jericho. But he was caught on the way. So that's a little bit about this road. Now let's talk, if we can, a little bit about the relationship between the Mount of Olives and Jerusalem. They're both in the highlands. The Mount of Olives is, if you had the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, let's see, I got to do it from your perspective. You have the Temple Mount, you have a valley here, it's called the Kidron Valley, and on the other side of the valley is the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives is a ridge. It's not, you know, it doesn't look like a mountain so much as it looks like a ridge. It goes from north to south toward the bottom, toward the southern end of it. It bends a little bit to the west. It does a little bend like this. Along that southern edge of the Mount of Olives, anybody ever been there? You've been there too, I assume. What's that? Do you remember what's on the southern edge, the southern end of that mountain? It's a huge cemetery, right?
Yeah.
And the whole thing looks like, I mean, you look at it from the air, it's just this looks desolate. There's nothing there. There's all these tombs that have been there for hundreds or if not thousands of years. They've got this huge cemetery. So you have that, and you've got this valley in between, and then you've got the Temple Mount, and you've got Jerusalem over here. Now, if you look at a picture of Jerusalem today, it's a huge, huge city. And you see the Dome of the Rock there. What you need to remember is that at the time of Jesus, Jerusalem was a little city. It was fairly large, but it was nothing like it is today. So you had the temple, which was supposed to be in the area. We believe it's up on the Temple Mount. That's where certainly the second temple was, up on that Temple Mount that Herod built. And the old city was directly by that and further to the south. Everything to the north and to the west is new. And the city of David is south, or you know, further down from the Temple Mount. Little old area there where he had to flee from. So you have the Temple Mount, you have Old Jerusalem, you have the Mount of Olives, and in between you have the Kidron Valley. There's another valley that's down here in Jerusalem, it's called the Valley of Hinnom, where they have the garbage dump.
And there's another cemetery, too.
There's another cemetery there? Oh, okay. Thank you for the details there. So I give you a little bit of the picture there, but the point is from the Temple Mount area, you look up, not terribly high up, but you look up at this mountain across the valley, and it's the Mount of Olives. At the bottom of the Mount of Olives is a church and an olive grove where they say is the Garden of Gethsemane. We don't know where exactly the Garden of Gethsemane was, but somewhere it was an easy walk from Old Jerusalem. You also have Hebrew University up there. You've got some other things up on Mount Zion. But Mount Zion's across the valley from where the Temple Mount is. There are some who believe there was kind of a bridge of sorts that made it level between the Mount of Olives and Jerusalem that went right into one of the gates on the Temple Mount. So that if you were coming from Jericho or coming from the east, you could, as you were coming to Jerusalem, rather than go down through the valley or navigate that somehow, you could go across this bridge and right into the Temple Mount area. And you could cross through the Temple Mount and get into the rest of the city.
Now there's a big freeway, so I don't know.
That's a big freeway, yeah, you're not going to do that now. So these things will come into play here in a minute when we go read. I just wanted to give you a description. That's the best I can do with my words. If you want to see more, you could talk to somebody who's been there, or you can look on my computer. I apologize. I forgot my projector. They have one here, but I don't have the right adapter I need. And we're putting our house up for sale, so the place in our bedroom where I put things that I have to take with me, you know, they tell you when you stage your house not to have so much stuff around. Well, that chair isn't there anymore. So I don't know where I sat the projector so I wouldn't forget it, because obviously it didn't work. I forgot it. But I did sit it somewhere this morning, but it just didn't see it on the way out of the room, and I don't know where it is. But it's not in the car. All right. So that's the best I can do with my description. But why was I going to describe that? Because I want this to come alive a little bit as we read now what Jesus did and when he did it. We're going to go back to Luke 19. He might still be there. It says he came near to Bethpage and Bethany. Well, that's on the southern end of the Mount of Olives. It's kind of near where those cemeteries are. We don't know exactly where Bethpage was, but it's down on the southern end of the Mount of Olives. It's not too far. It's an easy walk from the old city of Jerusalem, and it has to be because it was within a Sabbath day's journey. You could, you know, Jesus at the end, you know, when he was at Jerusalem, he could walk back to Bethany, he could walk back to Lazarus and Mary and Martha's place, or he could walk back to Bethpage. It was also, whatever for whatever this is worth, it was also the furthest distance away you could bake bread to be used in the temple. I don't know what all that means, but anyways, fairly close, fairly close. So he sent two of his disciples, it says, and from here, I guess we'll keep reading here. I didn't know if I wanted to go to a different gospel, but he says, go into the village over against you, in which you see entering, you'll find a colt tied, which you'd never a man has set. Loose him and bring him here. According to Matthew, there is a colt and its mother. And if any man asks you, why you need to take him, he said, because the Lord has need of him. And when they were sent, they went their way, found it just as he had said. So Jesus either knew supernaturally or he had prearranged this because he knew that this was the time he was going to declare who he was. And it says that as they were loosing the colt, the owners thereof said, well, why are you loosing it? The Lord has need, and that's okay. They brought him to Jesus, and they cast their garments upon the colt, and they sat Jesus on there. And as he went, they spread their clothes in the way. And when he was come near, even to the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, blessed be the King that comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. All right, so Jesus is going through a ritual here, or a show of who he is. Now, why is this a show? Well, you could turn back. I'll just give you the verse. Don't need to turn there. 1 Kings chapter 1, verses 32 to 35. It says Solomon, when he was given the office of king, he became king. He rode on a colt of a donkey that had never been ridden before. It was a tradition. This was the entry of a king. When Jesus put allowed his disciples and all of the people that were following him to give him some adulation there, and to sit him on this colt and to put their coats down as a gesture of respect and to wave the palm fronds. I had pictures of that too because they still reenact that every Palm Sunday. This was an admission or a declaration. I am king. I am who some of you say I am. Because when he did this, it was out in the open. And the Pharisees say, hey, make him stop. And Jesus wasn't about to make him stop because now it was time. Now it was time. And it says, I need to turn back first to show you another reason why they knew what this meant, and that's the book of Zechariah. People knew this was fulfillment of a prophecy. Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. Rejoice, I've got the King James here today. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king. And the King James is capital. Your king comes into you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass, upon the colt and the foal of an ass. You know, when he did this, these people knew, Zechariah 9:9. They knew the Messiah was going to do this when he came. And he's saying, you know, it's time. I'm Messiah. I am that person. Not only that, but he came into town and into the Temple Mount. Mark, if we go to Mark chapter 11. And start in verse 15. He had come into Jerusalem. Jesus went into the temple, began to cast them out that bought and sold therein. Overthrew the temples of the money changers. Why did they have money changers? Some of you know. Why did they have money changers at the temple? To buy what? Okay, but why did they have to change money? Because the people that ran the temple, they had a racket going. You had to use the temple shekel to buy the sacrifices. So you came in with your dollar, and they say, sorry, we don't take that. Well, you take temple shekel. Go over here, exchange. Yeah, so you had to exchange. Most people assume, the writers, historians assume that there was a certain fee charge for that. You know, there was money being made in the temple. It was a money-making operation there. So not only were they making money on the sacrifices, because they would say, well, your dove doesn't meet our standards, but you can buy one here, just happen to have some. But you have to go over here and change your money first. And Jesus said, nah, enough of this. You've made this is supposed to be my Father's house, right? So if he hadn't already made enough people mad by coming down off the mountain, remember now he's come up from Jericho. And this is what I was talking to my brother. He just was there last year. And he said, well, we did that trip. We came from Jericho and we went over the mountain. But they don't really, the road kind of goes around it. But that's what he would do. He came up the road and he had to go over the mountain. And then he descended the mountain, the ridge, descended it toward the Kidron Valley and across into the Temple Mount area. And it's visible. The thing about this, and I had a picture to show you, is if you're on the Temple Mount or you're in Old Jerusalem, you look across the valley, you can see this going on. It's not that far away, is it? You could see this procession. What in the world is going on? So the whole city could see that this was going on. It wasn't done in secret. He's making it obvious. The whole city can see. Because the city wasn't big then like it is now. It goes way over a hill now. No, not then. It was all pretty much all a place where you could see this being this what was going on the Mount of Olives. Now, if I want to continue here in Mark just to point out one thing. Cast out the money changers, and in verse 16 says he wouldn't allow any man should even carry a vessel through the temple. What does that have to do with? Well, I can't be sure, but remember I told you it was, you could come down the Mount of Olives and you could cross this thing. It looks like an aqueduct, really, but to cross this bridge to the Temple Mount area. It was a shortcut. So if you're coming into Jerusalem from the east, the easiest thing to do is cross this bridge, and to get to Jerusalem, this bridge stopped at the Temple Mount. You had to walk through the temple environment, not the temple proper, but the Temple Mount area. You had to walk through there. So if you were doing trade, you'd just come in, go in one gate, go out another gate, go into the city. And Jesus said, no, he stopped that too. So if he hadn't made enough people mad by coming down the Mount of Olives, telling them they couldn't do their business in the temple area, and they couldn't even carry their goods through the Temple Mount area, that was enough to put him on everybody's bad side, except the ones who were disciples and believed in him. So he was signing his death warrant, is what he was doing. He was coming into town, and kind of like in the Wild West, he's riding into town, he's going to make a few changes, and he made a lot of enemies in the process. Well, I guess that's enough of that story. The point is that Jesus did that, and he paid for that with his life, didn't he? They killed him. It was time. But that's not the end of the story. In Acts chapter 1, and start here in verse 6. They had come together. They asked him, saying, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? So here they thought it was going to happen. Then he died and resurrected. Okay, well, now good. That's good. Everything's good. Now you're going to do it? He said to them, it's not for you to know the times or the seasons, which the Father has put in his own power. But he told them they would receive power, as the Holy Ghost told them wait there till the Holy Spirit came on them. And they would be witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and throughout all the earth. And when he had spoken these things, verse 9, behold, he was taken up, and a cloud received them out of his sight. And when they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, two men stood by in white apparel, and they said, you men of Galilee, why do you stand gazing into heaven? The same Jesus which is taken up from you into heaven shall come in like manner as you have seen him go into heaven. Where were they? Verse 12 says, then they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is from Jerusalem a Sabbath day's journey. So there they were, somewhere up on the Mount of Olives on that ridge. And Jesus ascended. There's a church there now and a tower called the Church of Ascension. We have no idea if that's where it happened. But the point is it happened on the mountain. And the angel said, he's going to come back same way he left. And we have it in Zechariah chapter 14 also. Turn back to Zechariah, last time. And verse 4. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. Right? It's right across the Kidron Valley from Jerusalem. And the Mount of Olives will cleave in two. Therefore, toward the east, toward the west, and there'll be a great valley in the half of the mountain. Shall move toward the north. So you got this ridge that's running north and south. And this prophecy is saying there'll be a be a valley rent into it this way, and the mountain will go toward the north and to the south. And that's what we long for, not what happens to the mountain, but what happens at the mountain, that Jesus is going to come back just the way he left. So that's why we're here. And It all happened in the environs of Jerusalem there, in the Mount of Olives, right across the valley from there. And as Luke points out in his travel narrative, Jesus is king. And he is coming back. And for that, we praise God.